forgot how good I can do it. See, you don't get that I can warn Lou about your upcoming antics and share with the clients, too. So if you feel like getting up to something, they'll be prepared and can just sit back and enjoy the show. Fuck. Sheriff shot his wad in you. He shot in too much badass, so now you think you got balls. I totally hated when she talked like that, which was pretty much all the time. I was her daughter, for God's sake. No, wait. She went on. My prissy, fancy-pants daughter probably made him go in gloved. I did. And when he beat his retreat, he hadn't even taken the time to see to that particular business. He hadn't even offered 5 minutes of cuddling. He'd given me mine, got his. I heard his breath even on my neck. He'd pulled out, rolled to his ass on the side of the bed, and then he'd rolled right out. Again, I'm 38, not 18. You'd never acknowledge it, but I have a brain in my head, so yeah, of course he used a condom. Used a condom, she mimicked, like she's a nurse or something. Girl, real people call them rubbers. I'd had enough. Actually, I'd had enough when I was 13, and 16, and 18, 19, 20. And when her crap made me lose Keith. I could go on, but really, in Pleasantville, where it was actually pleasant, I definitely had enough. Mom wanted to play her games. I hadn't been able to stop her in 38 years. I wouldn't be able to now. The only thing I could do was change how I reacted. Keith had told me, but did I listen? Nope. Now he was with briefcase-toting lawyer Barbie, and I was here, alone, talking on the phone with my trash-mouth mother. And by God, I could change that too. We're done talking. We ain't done until I know I haul my ass out there. You got a check waiting for me. Don't waste the gas, Mom. God, you're a pain in my ass, and have been since I pushed you out. Love you, too. On that, I hung up. That felt good. For a whole second. Shit. She was going to do it. Shit. She was totally going to show it loose and cause a scene. I pulled in a deep breath and tried to let the calm of the quiet, dark street soothe me. I couldn't. Because my mom was going to cause a scene at my place of business whenever she worked up the energy to do it. Which, if her cable was imminently going to be turned off, and it was, seeing as she never made the call for a handout until that threat was real, would be soon. I'd lost jobs because of her in the past. Lou wouldn't ask me to leave. She knew all about Mom. She actually couldn't wait to meet her. Not to make friends, to see what she'd get up to. Lou was like that. She probably wouldn't be so excited for the possibility after she experienced the real thing, though. However, I couldn't muster up all my usual horror and despair after my mother's version of a loving phone conversation. Nope. Since he left, and I didn't sleep a wink, then I dragged around all day Sunday licking my wounds, even during my visit with Andy. And then I'd tried to keep myself together, worried it would come out in the salon all that day. My mind was filled with Hicks and Drake. I wished it could be filled with all he'd done to me, all he'd made me feel, how damned good it was. Respect, care, time, attention, not to mention talent. God, it had been amazing. Better than Keith by about 10,000 miles, and Keith was excellent in bed. Better than anybody. Yeah, I wished I could think about that. Even if it had ended with him sharing with me indisputably, I was only what I was. Something that had been shared with me way too many times before. This being a piece of ass, not worth any more of his time than it took to get what he wanted out of me. And I wished I could think about what an asshole he was for sharing just that with me. Especially after I felt, after I thought we had, whatever. I didn't feel it, and we didn't have anything but near simultaneous orgasms. But no, I couldn't think of that either. All I could think was what a complete and utter fool I'd been. He'd bought me a drink, stared in my eyes, not at my breasts, a nice switch, while he chatted with me between sets, like he gave a shit about what I said, and bam, I forgot all I'd learned, all my mama taught me, all the things all the guys in my life had taught me, all Keith had taught me, that being the only good man in the world was my little brother Andy. And as ugly as it was to think, that was probably only because he'd had a traumatic brain injury that had essentially arrested him at the age he'd sustained it. 15. Forever and ever. No therapy, no relearning of skills, no readjusting life expectations. So instead of Andy going for being an architect, he worked as a janitor. No nothing. Except keeping him safe and those around him the same while he lived his life reading comic books, watching movies, experiencing terrifying seizures, occasionally having episodes that were totally forgivable because big chunks of his brain had been damaged beyond repair. But the rest of the time, he was so damn sweet. He was a constant toothache. And him being the only real, sustained light in my entire life. Yeah, the only good guy in the world, or at least in my life, was my Andy. But I'd forgotten that. However, that wasn't what filled my head after Hickson left. Nope. It was the fact that he may never have seen me, not in the 18 months I'd been living in Glossop. Then again, in the beginning, he'd had no real reason to look. And after things went down, he'd had other stuff on his mind. But I knew Hope and the girls from the salon, and I'd seen him. Him and Hope. Unreasonably handsome Hickson Drake, with his cool, pool blue eyes, powerfully built body, and natural swagger that wasn't eye-roll worthy, but drool worthy. The tall, beautiful princess of Glossop, Hope, and their three equally beautiful children. Lou had a girl on the same soccer team as Sheriff Drake's girl, and I was close with all of Lou's family, except her husband Bill, who was likable but did things that were really not so likable. So it wasn't rare that I took in a home game. And I had a client who had a daughter who thought I walked on water, so she asked me to her dance recitals and I went. Sheriff Drake had a daughter who danced. So I'd seen them, all five of them, together, in various groups, separately. The perfect family. Tall, strong, proud, gorgeous, happy. Glossop's royal couple, hell, royal family. The sheriff and his brood. When they fell apart, the town was agog. They couldn't credit it. They couldn't believe it. It was unbelievable. No, unthinkable. Everyone thought it'd last a few days. Then they decided it might take a few weeks. After that, a few months. When the divorce went through, and I knew exactly when it went through, it was the talk of the salon all day. This making me an even bigger idiot. Can anyone say rebound? Everyone was freaked. If it could happen to the perfect family, it could happen to anybody. The townsfolk had been split down the middle. At first, men and catty women said it was all about Hope being Hope, thinking her shit didn't stink and her female parts were coated in gold, wanting to bust the balls of a man who would allow that to keep peace in his family. Until the time came when he was done allowing that. Women and men who wanted to get into Hope Drake's pants said it was Hickson who was an asshole. Probably had someone on the side, or several someones. And she was best shot of him. Because look at her. She's Hope Drake. She could get anyone. Time wore on, and Hope sat in Lou's chair and let her mouth run, and probably did it other places besides, thinking women would feel her pain. When, with what she had and the game she was playing endangering that, we did not. And the mixed looks Hickson Drake was getting started to be not so mixed anymore. The tall, beautiful princess of Glossop thought she was just that. So when my mom said soccer mom Barbie would get her G.I. Sheriff Joe back when he came to heel, she wasn't talking out her ass. Everyone knew Hope was pitching one hell of a fit to get her man to do what she wanted. The thing was, it wasn't only his Bronco that declared the kind of man he was. How the woman who'd shared nearly 20 years with him didn't clue in made everyone think less of her. And her waning popularity, especially in the last 3 weeks, was running out. So not many thought much of her already. Not anymore. Someone's tiara was tarnished, And unless she got her head out of her ass and came to heal, broken perfection would not get fixed. And it was my experience that a good way to make a woman come to heal was show her she could be replaced. Even with a trailer trash Farrah Fawcett who had a few too many years on her, it would work. Don't get me wrong. I didn't think Hixon took me to bed to get his wife back. At least not consciously. I just knew if nothing else would wake her shit up, that would. So if my mother had heard, Hope Drake definitely had. And the thing of it was, even though I wasn't Hope Drake's biggest fan even before it became clear what kind of woman she was and how that had affected her family, and it went without saying also before I slept with her ex-husband, there was a part of me that thought it best that happened. They fixed what was broken. Maybe not for him, definitely not for her, but absolutely for those three kids. I knew better than most that the perfect family never existed, but the slightly imperfect perfect family that still worked was on the endangered species list. So if there was a shot, everyone should do what they could to protect it. That was what I'd been thinking the past 2 days, that I hadn't done that. I'd been charmed by a handsome man who made me forget I was supposed to have hardened my heart against men who might look at their wives like she was the first female created and God had outdone himself. And that was how Hixon had looked at Hope. But me? He'd treat like dirt. And then he made me remember. Now. Well, now if my mom had heard about what had happened, I was likely going to be thrown right in the thick of it. And I had a feeling that wasn't going to go well for me. I had that feeling because nothing ever did. And damn it, I'd taken more than my fair share of lickings. I'd had enough. But it was more. After the one Keith had delivered, then me finding the first moments of respite in my life and thinking it might finally go okay, that being before Mom followed Andy and me out here and blew that all to smithereens, I didn't know for sure if I got another one, that I'd be able to keep on ticking.
Chapter 4 The In-Between Hixon Hicks felt it the minute he walked into the department the next morning. He saw the cause when he looked beyond Donna, Betts, and one of his other deputies, Larry, all of them at their desks in the bullpen. And he aimed his attention to his office where Hope was pacing. God damn it. He swung through the swinging half door, and it was Larry who moved from his desk, close to the aisle to say, Morning, Hicks. And sorry, man. We asked her to wait out here. She refused. And she pitched a fit when Donna said she was going to give you a call, so Donna thought it best to put her back there and maybe she'd cool off before you got here. He knew from having seen that pacing before. That hadn't happened. Not your problem, he growled, tipping his chin down to Larry, lifting it to Donna and noting that Betts was avoiding him, but doing it looking under her lashes toward his office. Once he'd greeted his deputies, Hicks just kept staring into his office as he prowled there, seeing Hope had noticed he'd arrived and was standing smack in the window with her hands on her hips like it was her damned office. And she was waiting for a naughty boy to show up and receive his chastisement. He didn't need three guesses to know that word had reached her about Greta. What he didn't quite get was why that drove her here. Surely the woman could share what was on her mind on a freaking phone, not dragging his staff in as witnesses to whatever she'd worked herself up to dole out. He moved down the side hall that led to the door to his office, as well as the one at the back that led to the alley. He turned right through the one to his office. He hadn't even closed the door when she launched in. You are fucking unbelievable. How could you humiliate me this way? She shouted. He closed the door and ground out. Calm down.
Calm down?
She screamed, advanced quickly and lifted a hand to shove his shoulder. It rocked back and he felt his face turn to stone. And he was way too pissed to fully experience it, but still. He distractedly felt something else turning to stone, and where that was happening was in his chest. You do not put your hands on me, he warned low. With what we are now, not ever, but not in anger, never in anger, Hope. She rolled up on her toes and spat.
Fuck you! You fucked a fucking hairdresser!
I can see you're pissed, I don't get it, but I can see it. So can three of my deputies and Reva. I get you don't care what that means to me as their sheriff, but they can also see you acting like a crazy woman. After a quick eye flare, Hicks was not surprised Hope, who cared what people thought of her and went to pains to keep up a variety of appearances, backed off two steps. Hicks moved into his office, and after the shove, he felt it prudent not to go to the blinds at the window and lower them. Instead, he walked behind his desk, putting distance and furniture between them.
"You don't get why I'm pissed?"
Hope asked when he'd stopped. He lifted his eyes to her to see she'd also moved to stand 4 feet in front of the desk between the two chairs there. "No, I don't."
"Are you fucking insane?"
she demanded to know. It sucked, but she was even beautiful like this, angry as hell. It flushed her cheeks, made her green eyes bright, made her chest heave, bringing attention to her full tits. She'd also often plant her hands on her hips or hitch out a foot, taking your attention to those areas, reminding you she had a great ass, fantastic long legs, and just how perfectly your hips fit into hers, and just how good it felt to have those legs wrapped tight around your ass. And she would sometimes toss her long, wavy hair that at 41, she now had to dye back to its natural, flawless pink champagne. Her words for the hue. But even aided to that color, it was no less magnificent. These were several of the reasons why Hicks had always found it difficult to argue with her. Seeing her that way, it would make him impatient to get to the part of the fight that would end it. That being having angry sex, something at which they both excelled.
Then again, normal sex with his ex-wife hadn't sucked either.
"Nope, not insane," he answered her question.
"You fucked a hairdresser at my salon," she informed him.
"Hope, I can't imagine you didn't know it would happen eventually. And in a town like this, it could be your salon. The grocery store, a teacher at one of the schools, whoever. You'd hear about it and likely know the woman. You know everybody, everybody knows you. It's unfortunate, but it was going to happen."
"It was going to happen?"
she snapped.
"I cannot believe you fucked a stylist at my salon. But what I really can't believe is that you fucked anybody."
Since she unfathomably wasn't noting the obvious, he pointed it out. "Me doing anything is not your concern."
It isn't.
She stammered irately and finished on a high-pitched,
"It isn't my concern?"
"It's not your concern," he affirmed. She shook her head in brief, concise shakes.
I cannot believe you'd say that or even think it, especially about something like this."
Right. Hicks had to admit he was confused. How could she not? "We're divorced," he pointed out. She leaned forward and on a near shout declared,
"For 3 weeks.
"That doesn't negate the fact we're divorced. But seeing as I'm reminding you of things, I'll also remind you that we may have been divorced for 3 weeks, but you kicked me out a year ago."
"And so this is my punishment?"
He felt his brows draw together.
"Your punishment?"
"My punishment. You making a point."
Hicks stared at her. Then he gave her the honest truth.
"Not one thing that happened between me and Greta had shit to do with you."
Again, she leaned forward and this time hissed.
"Do not say her name in my presence."
"Okay. Right. What the hell was going on here?"
"You do get the concept of divorce," he noted curiously.
"Don't be an asshole," she shot back.
"I'm not. I'm genuinely wondering at this point if you do."
"What I get is the fact that I have been asking you to have a conversation for the last, now more than 3 weeks, and you refuse to speak to me,"
she returned, leaning forward each time she put emphasis on her words. It had not been the prevailing reason why Hicks was overwhelmed with happiness when he'd married Hope 19 years ago. That reason being from that point forward, he'd only ever have one woman in his life he'd have to try to figure out. But he couldn't deny it had been a relief. The prevailing reasons were that she had a great sense of humor. She was more into watching sports than even he was. The same with action movies. They both wanted the same things out of life, including the number of children they'd had and the exact order and gender they'd miraculously been given them. She could often be generous with her love, affection, and time. She was spectacular in bed, and she was gorgeous. Now, he realized after all their years together, he didn't get her. He didn't get Betts. What he did get was that their bullshit pissed him off. Okay, seems I gotta expend the effort to make something else straight this week, he began.
Oh, so sorry, Hicks. Is your wife and the mother of your three children taxing you with her demands?
She cut in sarcastically. His voice dropped to a whisper. That's not right. You got it in you to get that or not. The simple matter of fact is that that is not right. His tone went normal, but steely when he kept on. You're not my wife anymore, Hope. That's something you wanted, not me. Like you have a way of doing, you got what you wanted. And getting that, you don't get to call me over and over again to demand my time. You don't get to storm into my place of business and pitch a fit, and you do not get to act like I wounded you when I'm living my life, a life you disconnected, legally and emotionally, from yours.
Hicks.
Like Betts, even though his mother had taught him differently, especially when speaking with a woman, he talked over her. Now I see when we made arrangements for custody and decisions on who was going to get the house and all that other shit, we should have made it clear how this was going to go from now on. Since you're here, we'll take that opportunity. She stepped forward, her expression beginning to soften as she noted his mood and the fact that it wasn't shifting. So her game began to change.
Honey.
He leaned into his fist in his desk and growled. Do not ever fucking call me that again, Hope. He watched the color drain out of her face as her eyes widened. He ignored that and declared, Now this is the way it's gonna be. You got a father and two brothers who live in this county who can help you out if you got a problem with your car, the house. Unless it affects my children. I don't want to hear from you. You find someone you want to date, I don't care, date them. I don't want to hear from you. I find someone I want to see, that's my business. I'll do it. And I won't be giving you a courtesy call to share that intel. He drew in a breath, but continued speaking before she could get a word in. But if you need to change arrangements with the kids for any reason, you text me. It'll be rare I won't be able to take my kids, so that won't be a problem, and we won't need discussion. We have an issue to discuss about the children, we talk on the phone unless it's serious. Other than that, Hope, you didn't want to be in my life. You are no longer in my life. You wanted us done, we're done. And listen to that, Hope, because I'm not going to repeat myself. And having a lot of time to think on it, doing that like I've been doing now for years, when I say we're done, we are done. Her eyebrows were up, her eyes blinking rapidly before she whispered,
You can't mean that.
He felt his head dipping to the side in mystification. I loved you, he told her. She moved another step forward, lifting her hand, her face again warming.
Hicks,
I loved the family we made. I loved the life we created. She stopped in front of his desk and put her hand on it, her mouth beginning to curve up. And you tore that apart, he went on. Her lips parted as her face went slack in shock. You broke us, he reminded her. You broke me, then you ended us. You want to be friends now, that's not going to happen. You think you can do that and still depend on me to be there whenever you need me, that's not going to happen either. She whispered, but he didn't stop speaking. I wanted to grow old with you, Hope. I wanted to drive around the country in an RV, or buy some bungalow in Arizona to spend the winter months, or whatever we decided we were going to do. But I wanted to do it with you. Hold your hand when our son stood at the front of the church waiting for his bride. Turn right into your arms when our daughter safely brought grandchildren into the world. Sign the cards you gave me for our grandkids' birthdays, graduations, whatever we could celebrate, until the day I died. I told you all this before when I tried to find a way to fix whatever you thought was broke. But you didn't listen. You didn't even share with me what you thought was broke so I could try to fix it. You just took all that from me. And it hurt like fuck. So I am not going to be your friend or the man you call when the toilet gets backed up. This time, you pushed for what you wanted. It's you that lives with the consequences. You don't push even more to make it the way you now want it to be.
We really need to talk, Hicks,
she whispered urgently, almost pleading. His voice shared exactly how much he meant it when he stated.
You know my answer to that, and I will not answer that request again. They stood, staring into each other's eyes until he watched it happen. Bets could get mean. Hope could get ugly. And right then, she got ugly.
You want it that way, Hicks? You got it.
She bit out. He pushed off his fist in the desk and crossed his arms on his chest. Deciding not to remind her, again, that wasn't the way he wanted it, and point out that was the way she'd made it. He'd said his piece. They were done. And he was done.
Now, I know another election won't be coming around for a few more years, but don't think you treat me like shit this way. It'll be that easy to win, when the other two times you won was because of my dad, my mom, my brothers, and me.
She jerked a thumb at herself.
We're McCook. And I'm not thinking it'd be hard to remind folks you're not.
Was she serious about that bullshit? For Christ's sakes, the first time he ran unopposed. He opened his mouth to speak, but she wasn't done.
And I hear your slut does good hair. Though thank God her hands have never been in mine. But thinking, her moving in on you the way she did, she might find herself losing clients. And fast.
He felt all the muscles in his body get tight and started. Hope, don't you?
Nope.
She shook her head, moving away but not losing eye contact with him.
You stood there telling me the way it was, Hicks. Now you get to know the way it is. And part of that way is that you don't get to tell me what to do anymore.
Like he'd ever told the woman what to do. He rounded the desk and followed her, warning. You don't want to play it this way. She put her hand on the door handle, turned to him and spat.
Want to bet?
He made it to her just as she'd half pulled open the door. He slapped a hand on it above her head and shoved it closed. She jerked her head back to look up at him with narrowed eyes. He tipped his chin down to look at her, right up in her space and not moving. Shaw is going into the military. But we got soccer camps, dance classes, college tuitions, then weddings to pay for, Hope, he informed her. Not certain the Schroeder name holds the sway you think it does, but regardless, I just want to see if I have this clear. Your play to hurt me because you're not getting your way is to threaten my livelihood and take away my ability to see to my children?
You're a good cop, Hicks. You'll find another job in another county or some city, where you always really wanted to be anyway.
He could not believe he was hearing this. So your play is to try to take me away from my kids? She gave a casual shrug, but her eyes were flashing with fury. He was hearing this. He just couldn't believe it. And you don't even know Greta, but you know Lou. And you're gonna try to throw them under the bus to have your tantrum?
Greta should know better than to jump on a man before the ink is dry on his divorce papers.
Greta didn't pick me up, Hope. That was me.
I don't need the details,
she hissed, coming up on her toes to do it. She rolled back and continued.
But like you said, she got what she wanted. She lives with the consequences. She's probably been panting after you since she got into town, lying in wait.
I've never seen the woman before Saturday.
Maybe not, Hicks. But for sure she's seen you. All the women have seen you. And she's a woman. She saw her shot. So don't be stupid. You didn't pick her up. You didn't do anything but be Hicks and Drake, which is all you ever needed to be.
He had no idea what that remark meant, and he didn't give a crap. Leave Greta alone, he warned. Her face twisted, and suddenly she wasn't beautiful at all.
Kiss my ass.
She turned to the door and yanked on it, so Hicks removed his hand and stepped away. He turned and watched through the window as she stormed out of his department. Goddamn shit, he muttered when he slammed through the front door. He took his gaze from the window, not meeting any of his deputy's eyes, and stalked to his desk. He turned on his computer, but didn't enter the password. He didn't even sit down. He stalked back around the desk and only stopped when he saw Donna in the door. Got somewhere I gotta go, Donna, he told her, instead of nodding and getting out of the way. She walked in and closed the door quietly behind her. Christ, was he having to repeat himself with a woman again? Donna, he clipped.
Think you should let Hope have some time to get her head together.
I'm not worried about Hope. Without hesitation, she continued.
Then I think you should know Lou opens at 8. But on Tuesdays, Greta doesn't start seeing clients until 10. She does late hours so ladies who work can get to see her. Being a lady who works, and seeing as she's my stylist, I know her schedule.
Hicks ground his teeth.
I see you're not in a good mood, she said carefully. But I know you're a man who doesn't like to be blindsided. So I'm gonna say it even though I think you probably already know. Everyone in town is talking about it.
Shit, he hissed between his teeth.
She took a hesitant step forward, her eyes sliding to the window before they came back to him.
We didn't say anything about it because we were all pulling for you. We thought up until... Well, you know,
She didn't finish that, but she did go on.
It's just that we had hope. We didn't say anything because we thought it would all work out. But now, well, I think you should know the town's been talking about it since around the time you stood in your own driveway and threw your suitcases in the back of the Bronc.
Hicks drew breath into his nose, tipping his head back to look at the ceiling and lifting his hands to rest them on his hips.
But I figure you probably knew that too,
she said quietly. He again looked at her.
For what it's worth, she went on, I'll say at the beginning this time, Greta's really great.
Nothing is happening with me and Greta, he ground out. She looked him right in the eye, hesitated a beat, then whispered,
That's a shame.
My divorce was final 3 weeks ago, he pointed out. She nodded.
Uh-huh.
She doesn't need the shit I got in my head right now, he shared. But it's way too soon for me, my kids, and because of that, it wouldn't be fair on any woman.
Right,
she said softly. We just had a thing. She again nodded.
It happens.
Hicks dropped his head and looked at his boots, muttering, Hope is gonna grind her to ash.
Jep and Marie Schroeder are salt of the earth,
Donna declared. And Hicks lifted his head to look at her again.
Cook and Reed, too. Everyone likes them. Hope's family has that from the town, and they also get a lot of respect.
Her gaze leveled on his in that way of hers that got attention even from the drunkest drunk or the most punkish kid. And she kept talking.
But none of them held Chrissy Schultz's hand until the fire department got there with the jaws of life to get her out of that car, Hicks. And none of them was seen having a word with Lyle Koch at the side of the church when his wife turned up at work with a black eye for about the 15th time. And none of them treated old Mrs. Olson like she was perfectly sane to think her house was haunted and went to it every night, driving all the way out to that old farm 30 miles before he went home to his family, just so he could do walkthroughs to give her peace of mind that some poltergeist was not going to spirit her to another realm. All this until her kids got her sorted in a nursing home. None of them did any of that. But you did, and everybody knows it.
You heard? He murmured. Her face changed in a way he'd never seen it, but only for an instant. Then she shook her head and said,
I grew up in this town. Grew up here just like Hope did. I know her, Hicks, and she's a great gal. That's getting lost in all this, but she just plain is. I know that because I grew up with her. But even if I didn't, I'd know it knowing you and knowing you're not a man who would put up with a woman who wasn't. We all know she's a great gal.
She pulled in a breath, kept her eyes trained on him, and kept going.
Except when she doesn't get her way.
She's always been like that, from way back. And right now she's not getting her way, and everyone who knows her knows how that goes. The point I'm trying to make is, don't let her get into your head and give you even more to worry about. It's not just your deputies that are rooting for you, boss. And it's not just us who want to see you happy again.
He acknowledged that with a short nod of his head. This will pass. For all of us, he told her.
It always does.
Thanks for coming in here, Donna. She gave him a small grin and said,
Always around you need me, Hicks.
She was. He had his boys in that town. But now that he was thinking on it, the person he was closest to was Donna. She hung out with him at the outpost before Hope asked him to leave. But she did it a lot more frequently after. She was his most veteran deputy, so in the rare instance anything went down, she was his number one. He counted on her to keep the others focused when he wasn't around, and she never let him down. She was a good deputy, a good woman. Her husband knew it, her kids, the town, and so did Hicks. Thanks, he murmured, turning back to his desk.
Right, boss. That's out of the way, you should know. Peter's cows got loose again. They're blocking County Road 16 and traffic, such as it is, it's backing up, which, through the report, is all of 3 cars. He's not answering his phone. Should I send Larry and Betts out there to deal with it?
Peters was probably still passed out from drinking alone in front of his television like Hicks suspected he had every night since the mean son of a bitch's wife came to her senses and left him 2 years before. His fields had been fallow those 2 years, and Hicks had no idea how his cows hadn't wasted away. But his fences had, seeing as the man wasn't a good farmer even before his wife took off. Send him with the message that this is the third time, and McCook County Sheriff's Department gives more than 3 strikes but less than 5. So he best get on to sorting out that damn fence or county fines will have to be deducted from his whiskey budget. And if the drivers are still idiotic enough to be waiting for cows to pass when our deputies get there, tell them to thank whoever called it in and divert the drivers. This county is on a grid system. It shouldn't be difficult for them to find an alternative route. Her lips ticked on her.
Gotcha.
And with that, she took off. Hicks turned to his computer, thinking, if Greta wasn't going to be showing up at work in less than 2 hours, he'd have gone to deal with Peters himself. A banner day for the sheriff. That meaning there was something to do. However, she needed a heads up, and it should come from him. But the last time they dealt with Peters, they'd had to wedge open his door and throw a glass of water in his face to wake his ass up. He might not have time to deal with Peters and get to Greta in time to warn her before she faced her day at the salon. What should not be was him showing up at her front door unexpectedly, invading her space after he'd exited it in the way he had. It wasn't better he'd be showing up at her work, but he figured it was better than invading her home, even to stand on her porch. So work it was. And until then, and after that chore was done, he just had to hope he was right, that this would pass, and do it without any more of Hope's casualties piling up.
At 5 to 10, Hicks pushed through the door at Lou's House of Beauty, and seeing as he'd been there before to drop off or pick up Corinne and Mamie when they'd had their appointments,
albeit infrequently since Hope normally went with them, he didn't have to take in the decor. It was, like pretty much everything in Glossop, suspended in time. The women there could be wearing those dresses with shoulder pads and having their hair rolled in the way they did during World War II, or they could be how they were right then. The woman in Lou's chair getting a hot pink lock of fake hair what looked like Velcro to her roots.
Well?
He looked to Lou when she started stammering and saw her wide eyes cut to the back of the salon, even if her face remained pointed to him.
Hey, Hicks.
Lou, he greeted, skimmed a glance through the woman in her chair who didn't know and looked back to Lou. She in the back? He knew he didn't have to say who she was. If any crime ever happened in that county, he'd have Lou on his confidential informant list. That's the way it was everywhere. From rumor to speculation to hard facts, if they were to be had, the first place they were had was at the local beauty parlor.
Yeah,
Lou answered. Thanks, Hicks muttered, and without invitation moved that way.
He did it wondering if Greta had been in that salon any of the times he'd been there for Corinne and Mamie,
and he just hadn't noticed her. Then he pushed through the door to the back, saw her standing at some shelves filled with bottles, boxes, and tubes, and she turned to him, the visual of her right there, a few feet away, live and in person, smacked him in the face. And he knew there was no chance in hell he hadn't noticed her. He loved his wife. When they were together, his mind had not once taken him to another place, not even to wonder how it would be with another woman. But he was still a guy. And Greta was tall, and she was built. She had a few pounds on Hope, but they'd settled in all the right places. On Saturday night, she'd been wearing a tight black dress that hit her knees. It had one shoulder bare, material swooping over the other, and it was covered in sequins with dangling spangly bits that moved when she did. Now she was wearing a pair of faded jeans that had a wide cut at the hem and a cream, slouchy, colorless shirt that almost looked like a man's, except for the silky material it was made from,
and the fact the long tails were cinched closely at her waist in a knot.
The shirt's arms were rolled up near to her elbows and its buttons undone at the chest to the point cleavage was a given. And Greta had fucking great cleavage. There was a mess of thin gold necklaces coming down her chest to flirt with the opening in her shirt. Long, thin hoops that tangled in her hair and brushed her shoulders. And peeking under the hems of her jeans, he could see a pair of spike-heeled, tan suede sandals that, across the foot, had a load of thin straps. Her toes were painted a wine color, as were her nails. It was far from good. She not only looked great in a tight black dress, she looked seriously great in just a pair of jeans and a shirt. But it was her hair, face, and eyes that had him standing silent, staring at her. Eyes a light blue that was almost gray. They were big, wide-set, making her seem open, approachable, friendly. And she had a lot of hair that had a lot of big curls, feathering and waving away from her face, a mix of honey and sunshine in the tendrils. And he remembered she'd had a great smile. Big teeth that were so white, if the healthy whites of her big eyes and mass of her big hair didn't accompany them, they might seem unreal. But when she smiled and really gave it to you, her pretty rosy lips spread wide, exposing two rows of the most perfect teeth he'd ever seen. That smile could blind you. Though she wasn't smiling then. She looked frozen in time. "Greta," he started, just as the door clicked shut behind him. At the sound of his voice, she jerked out of it and took two wide steps right into his space. Tipping her head back, she whispered heatedly, "What are you doing here?" "Something's happened and I need to share." Her head tipped angrily, and her mass of hair went with it. It lasted less than a second, and it was a spectacular show.
"Yeah. Like your ex calling Lou and telling her to erase all her and your daughter's appointments from her books forevermore and to be ready because her posse are going to be calling in and doing the same?"
she asked tersely. He looked to her shoulder and whispered, "Shit.
Lou's not friends with your wife, she's friends with me," she went on. "She'll hold strong. But I reckon your ex follows through with what she isn't hiding as her plan, only so much Lou can take. What with the fact that Bill sometimes forgets that marriage is a partnership, and his part of the partnership includes letting his family share in his paychecks instead of them going to the outpost to pay his tab every month."
"Fantastic. I'll have a word with Bill," he told her. "Or another one."
"Don't have a word with Bill, Sheriff. Have a word with your wife."
"She isn't my wife, Greta."
"Not sure she's been fully notified of the status change."
"She has. And if she hadn't, we had words this morning." Her brows drew together as she slid an inch back.
"Words that might drive her to make a few calls to her posse so all of them could check off their to-do list canceling those pesky hair appointments?"
"Words like that, yeah," he ground out. She stepped a step away and looked to the floor at her side, murmuring,
"Damn."
"Greta," she looked to him, and he had to take pains to ignore the fact that one look from those eyes and that face made his entire focus center on the itch in his hands urging him to touch her, and the feel of his crotch. "Have your clients been canceling?" he asked.
"Not yet, but it'll happen and that won't be too good. But now it's happening to Lou, and she needs asses in her chair, Sheriff, not cancellation seeing as she has two daughters to feed, and, oh, I don't know, she might want some ramen noodles for herself and maybe to be able to throw some scraps at Bill every now and again."
"This will blow over," he said. And he hoped like hell he was right. She studied him, saying a dubious,
"Right.
It will. And you and Lou will be good," he assured. "It was a one-time thing. People will see that and then someone else will do something that'll take their attention and they'll forget all about it." He powered through her wince when he said it was a one-time thing. And she powered through the rest of it, declaring,
"You clearly don't know women very well. When the sisterhood gets activated, they'll train their daughters to pile bitch hatred on their mark to ensure it won't die when they kick the bucket."
His gaze moved to her hair before it went back to her eyes. "Don't know, but my guess is you're talented. Closest hair salon is 20 miles away, and someone might make that trek once or twice to make a point. But then it'll get old. But regardless, Hope has an elevated idea of her pull in this town. You do your job well,
I'm sure your clients will be loyal to you.
Well, I'm glad you're sure.
He moved into the space she'd put between them. It was a mistake. Added to all the rest that was her. Her perfume hit him. He did his best to ignore that too and murmured, "It's gonna be okay, Greta." She held her ground, even if she did it, holding her body stiffly, and returned.
"It's not gonna do the cause of communicating. It was just a one-time thing. You showing here, Sheriff."
It hit him then she was calling him Sheriff, not Hickson or Hicks. He didn't comment on that or think about the fact he didn't like it all that much. He said, "I wanted to give you a heads up."
"Well, thanks, you've done that. You have another heads up to give me, come in disguise, or better yet, try smoke signals."
Shit. She was going to make him laugh. He couldn't laugh. He had to get this done so he wouldn't experience something else that drew him to her. He started. At that, she moved back two steps into the cramped space, nearly running into the shelves, rolled her eyes to the ceiling, and declared to it,
"Oh boy, here we go."
He felt tightness hit his neck. "Here we go with what?" She looked at him.
"I jumped the gun, sorry, bud."
She circled a hand at him.
"Carry on."
"Here we go with what?" he repeated.
"You want the multiple choice?"
she asked. He rocked back on his heels and crossed his arms on his chest. As he did, she watched him do it, her gaze dipping to his chest, and something came over her face that looked a lot like she'd looked the first time he touched her hand resting on the table between them at the Dewdrop. She wiped that clean when she refocused on him. For his part, he took pains to ignore that too.
"A, you can try to make yourself feel better for treating me like a piece of ass by apologizing again."
Damn, that was what he'd been about to do.
"B,"
she went on,
"you can treat me like the piece of ass you think I am by angling for a little nookie in Lou's back room, or perhaps showing me to the alley."
Okay, right. He'd been a dick, but even so, he was there. She knew why, so she had to know that shit was not on. "Greta," he began on a growl.
"Then there's C."
She rolled over his word with some of her own.
"You starting the conversation that you think might win you a piece of ass whenever you get the itch by ascertaining if I'm open to be your booty call."
He closed his mouth and felt his lips thin.
"Or D, a combination of the above,"
she concluded. "A," he bit off.
"Right,"
she mumbled. "I'd also like to offer you an explanation," he continued tightly.
"Well, I'd say I'm all ears, but hopefully I have a client coming in T-minus right about now."
Damn. She was infuriating and hilarious at the same time. She hadn't been hilarious at the Dewdrop. She just sang like a dream, looked like a wet dream, and listened while he talked like she gave a shit what he had to say. Christ. And damn it, he hadn't asked her a thing about herself. Christ. "I got divorced very recently," he informed her.
"Considering I'm learning the hard way that you're a public personality, Sheriff, I know that. But just to say, I've been in Glossop a while now, so I knew it already. Which makes me the idiot."
"You aren't an idiot."
"I am,"
she whispered. All of a sudden, Hicks grew still. And he did, because just as suddenly she changed. The whole of her changed. Hell, the air in the room changed. "You're not an idiot," he whispered back. She said nothing. It was good. All of it, not just what happened in your bedroom. He watched her swallow, but she didn't reply. "I've been married for 19 years. I signed my divorce papers 3 weeks and 3 days ago," he finally shared.
"You're counting the days,"
she said softly. "Yeah," he replied the same way. "And now I think you get me." She nodded, lifting her hands to cup her elbows in a defensive posture that, strangely, Hicks felt a trace of pain just at witnessing it. If it had happened in a few months, he trailed off.
"I get it."
"It didn't."
"No."
"So the time isn't right for me. I got kids for them, so also for you." She nodded again. "And now I've screwed it up," he said. "Acted like a dick, made you feel..."
"It's okay."
"It isn't."
"It's okay, Hickson."
She called him Hickson. The tension went out of his neck. "I didn't mean to make you feel what I made you feel, and I'm sorry for that." So sorry, Greta. I had a lot messing with my head. Too much. So much I shouldn't have taken it there between us. You got no reason to believe me, but I'll say it anyway. I'm not that guy.
I believe you.
He studied her. Yeah? She nodded. And it was then she started unraveling him. She did this letting her face get soft.
You've been married 19 years. Unless you stepped out on her, it's impossible for you to be that guy.
I never stepped out on her.
I believe that too,
she whispered. And she did. He saw it in her eyes, in the softened line of her body. Jesus. She was a woman who could communicate with every inch that was her. No figuring out Greta. She gave it all with everything she had. He had to ignore that, too. Right. Good, he muttered, but held her gaze. But it isn't okay. I was the ass in all that. You didn't deserve that. I should have explained it then. You are great.
Thanks,
she said quietly. He drew in a breath and said gently, I'm glad we got that sorted, Greta. With the way I treated you, I don't deserve it, but it means a lot you took the time to listen so I could give it to you.
Well, thanks for taking the time to give it to me.
He wanted to smile in order to see if she'd give him that back, but he didn't deserve that either. Now you've got a client, he prompted. She lifted her chin.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll let you go. She unhooked her hands from her elbows to throw an arm around the door at the back.
That leads out into the alley.
I'm walking through the salon. She stared at him. We didn't do anything wrong, he stated. We're adults. We're connected. We enjoyed each other. I'm not attached anymore. You aren't either. He lifted his brows. I assume. She shook her head, her hair brushing all over her shoulders, something Hicks had to avoid watching.
I'm not.
She wasn't. A woman who could sing with that honesty, listen with it, talk with it, and make love with it. Of course she wasn't. He forged past that too, and carried on talking. So we have nothing to be ashamed about. Nothing to hide. Hope can get ugly. That's her prerogative. We don't have to give people reason to believe she has that right because she doesn't. She's a 41-year-old woman throwing a tantrum. The folks in this town are close-knit and loyal. They're also sensible. They'll see things as they are and move on. If Hope doesn't, it's not my problem anymore, and it sure as hell isn't yours.
Okay, Hickson.
He looked into her big eyes, and he wanted to ask her to lunch at the Harlequin. He wanted to see if she was free some evening next week to take her to a movie. He couldn't do that, because his ex-wife was who she was, and things were how they were. Hope was giving him reasons to fall out of love with her. But that was where he was at now, falling out of love. He knew Greta intimately. He knew she was funny and honest, and he knew there was a vulnerability to her, the cause of which it wasn't his right to have. That was all he knew. Except for the fact that he knew without doubt she didn't need to be like his apartment, the in-between while he was sorting out his life. She deserved more. He just wasn't in a place he could give it to her. And with the wounds Hope had inflicted, at that time in his life, he wasn't sure he could give it to anyone again, at least not for a long time. In that time, Greta could find her more, and she didn't need a man with his head a mess standing in her way.
I gotta get to my client, she said.
He stepped out of the way and jerked his head to the door. Go. She moved to it and put her hand on the handle but turned to him. Then she ripped his heart clean out of his chest, her big, beautiful blue eyes staring right into his as she said,
She's a complete fool.
With that, she opened and walked through the door. Hicks pulled air into his nostrils and smelled hints of her perfume. Shit. He gave it a beat. 3. And after that, he followed her, dipping his chin to the woman in the salon, a number that had grown more than double to when he'd walked in, murmuring, Ladies? But he caught Greta's eyes, tipped his head to the side, his lips up, and then without looking back,
he walked out the front door. And he did it not having that first clue that, with a tip of his head and a small curl to his lips, he shifted the axis of Glossop, Nebraska in a way anyone who knew either of them, which was most, started to believe dreams could come true.
Chapter 5. All I Need. Greta. The door to the salon opened, and Lou called out, "Greta is not talking about Sheriff Hicks and Drake." I sighed and looked from the sink, where I was doing a rinse, to the door to see my next client, Sherry, hurrying through. Her gaze on me, eyes huge. She was 20 minutes early. She was usually 10 minutes late. "So it's true," she cried. Wonderful. This was what it had been like all day. To say I was relieved that the salon hadn't been firebombed after word got out the Princess of Glossop's ex-husband had slept with its resident, easy-trick hairdresser-slash-lounge singer, that being me, might be a high-drama understatement, but it was true. To say that relief was tempered by the fact I'd learned Hicks and Drake was a good guy, he just was never going to be the guy for me, was just an understatement, but a sad one. Greta has enough to worry about without every female walking in that door asking her for the lowdown about our sheriff, Lou declared. Sherry kept her eyes on me. "I know, I've heard. I think Hope Drake activated the PTA phone tree to rally the girls to come to your house tonight, drag you out and tar and feather you." Wonderful. "Stupid woman does that," Joyce, sitting in Lou's chair with Lou Shears working at her head, chimed in. "I'll get Jim's shotgun, sit on Greta's porch, and offer the medical professionals opportunity to explore the concept of finally extricating her head out of her behind by aiming some buckshot at it." "Me too," Mrs. Swanson, who had her head back in the sink, shouted out. Mrs. Swanson was 82, and sadly had such bad arthritis, her weekly wash and set wasn't a luxury. It was a necessity, since she couldn't do her own hair. She certainly couldn't pull the trigger on a shotgun. She might not even have the strength to hold one. Though Joyce did, and she was also ornery enough to do exactly what she said. "We're not talking about Hope Drake," Lou announced. "Greta's got problems coming out the yin-yang, starting not with Hope, but with the fact her mama threw down." Sherry's still huge eyes turned to me, and she pushed out a long, "No." I nodded to her, then turned back to finish up Mrs. Swanson. "Oh my gosh," I heard Sherry exclaim. "I hope she comes today. I want it to be a day I have an appointment. I don't want to miss out on Greta's mom making a scene, cursing and blinding. All this town's been talking about is Hicks and Hope Drake for months. It's getting boring. We need something new to talk about." We really did not, especially if it was about me and my mother. "She really say the F word out loud and in public?" Mrs. Young called out from under the dryer. I hadn't only told Lou about my mom. You did hair, you chatted, so my regulars knew too. So did Lou's. I grabbed a pink towel off the shelves behind the sinks, shook it out of the precise roll Lou and I folded them in, and started to wrap Mrs. Swanson's head in it, saying, "The F word, B word, H word, D word, and she'll probably sprinkle in the P word and even the C word." Mrs. Young, rightly, looked horrified. "That's it," Joyce stated. "She strolls in here and does any of that, it's gonna be me going to your mama's house and dragging her out to take her to one of Pastor Keller's revivals. He'll dip her in the river and hold her down until she sees Jesus. And if she doesn't, he'll hold her down until she sees Jesus." I helped Mrs. Swanson to sit up, with my gaze on Lou, both of us visibly trying not to bust a gut laughing. "I know we're talking about your mama now, Greta, but just to ask, are people canceling because of Hope?" Sherry queried worriedly from where she'd sat herself in one of the dryer chairs, with its bonnet turned up. "Hope canceled her and the girls' appointments with Lou, and Julie Baker canceled her appointment with me next week," I answered, walking Mrs. Swanson to my chair. "But other than that," I shook my head. "Well, that's good," Sherry mumbled. "Julie Baker would tear her own fingernails out by the roots before she'd miss a chance to do something mean," Joyce shared. But she'll haul her behind to Styles and Smiles all of once before she puts her tail between her legs and comes back to you girls. Yep, I'm not bothered, Lou declared nonchalantly, running her fingers through Joyce's painfully short hair to distribute the product that only Lou put in to make it look cute, since Joyce was a wash-and-go type of woman. I lay witness to no less than 5 terror attacks on hair that came to me from Styles and Smiles. Francine never mastered the art of foils to the point it's nearly criminal she keeps on trying. This was true. I'd had 2 women come to me after their hair had come off with the foils put in at Styles and Smiles. This made me think I never should have worried about Lou and her House of Beauty. Some women budgeted not only for the style, but for the gas that would take them across the county to see Lou or me. They'd take a floozy sleeping with their sheriff and having a foul-mouthed mama working there in order to get good hair. No sweat. And I'd met Francine. She was a nice lady, but unless you wanted a straight-up dye, bleach, set, or cut from the era of Shirley Jones to Dorothy Hamill, to her most contemporary look, the Rachel from Friends circa the 1st season, your best bet was to go to Lou's House of Beauty, or the Cutting Edge, which was miles away in Moore Springs. We weren't only the only shop in town. We were one of the only choices in the county. While Lou whisked off Joyce's drape, Mrs. Young's dryer binged, and she pulled up the bonnet, doing this talking. Hicks'll bring his girls back to you, Lou. Hope might not be level-headed enough to understand her girls'll lose their minds. They go somewhere and get bad hair. But Hicks adores his daughters, and he might be a man, but he's also the father of 2 girls, so he'll understand it. Not to mention, he won't be too fond of wasting the gas money to get them to Yucca to see Francine. I hope so, Lou replied, taking cash from Joyce for her cut and style. They're good girls, and they've got great hair. I'll miss having my hands in that. And anyway, Sherry put in, he won't diss the salon where his girlfriend works. I felt a heavy weight hit my chest as my eyes shifted from combing out Mrs. Swanson's hair to Sherry. I felt Lou's attention on me, and I had a feeling she was about to say something, but I beat her to it. I'm not his girlfriend, Sherry. But I heard, she began, we met, and we... I slid my glance to Lou, then back to Sherry. It's too soon for him. He's a nice guy, and I'm glad I met him, but it was a one-time thing. Has he lost his marbles like his ex? Joyce asked incredulously, and my attention shifted to her. It's too soon for him. Too soon, schmoo-soon, Joyce snapped at me. Hicks and Drake never struck me as stupid. In fact, the opposite. And everyone knows, good drops itself in your lap, you don't shove it off and say, now's not the right time. I'm dealing with the fact my addled wife didn't see the good thing resting his head on the pillow beside hers. No. You snatch up that good and hold it close and process all that dealing while life reminds you. You survive the bad. Good always comes sliding back in right after it. That's a nice thing to say, Joyce, I told her quietly. I'm not being nice, she retorted. What do the kids call it today? She didn't pause for an answer. While hefting her tall, strong, sturdy farmer's wife body out of Lou's chair, she declared, I'm being real. That was when I looked right at Lou. Lou didn't need me to look at her. She was already ordering, okay, let's stop talking about this. Joyce walked up to Mrs. Swanson and me at my chair. Have a mind to stroll right into the sheriff's department and share some of it with Hicks, she informed me. Mrs. Swanson made a frightened peep, likely because Joyce wasn't only a wash-and-go type of woman. She was a no-nonsense, ballsy, and known not to care if you had a problem with her speaking her mind, in which she had a lot of opinions she felt the need to let out. I whispered, please don't do that. I won't, girl, Joyce stated. Have a mind to do it, but I like you too much to meddle. He's got his head planted in his keister like his ex-wife. He has to sort himself out. And if he misses out on a good thing doing it, that's his problem. She leaned into me. But just to say, don't you worry about Hope. Known her since she was a little thing. She can get up to some antics, but the minute she realizes it's making her look bad, she'll back down. Everybody in this town knows that, and most everybody in this town knows you, so you won't have any problems. Not a good girl like you. Just ride it out, Greta. It'll be over before you know it. Thanks, Joyce, I replied on a smile. Whatever, she muttered and turned to Lou. 6 weeks, Lou. You're in my schedule, Joyce, Lou returned. On that, Joyce walked out. I hope he changes his mind about it being too soon, Sherry said, and I looked from rolling a thin rod in Mrs. Swanson's hair to her. Even my Rich says something's wrong in the cosmos you don't have a man. I always told him I wasn't sure there was a man that was man enough to be good enough for you. At that, my chest warmed. Wow, Sherry, that's so sweet, I told her. Maybe it's also true, she replied. I heard about you and Hicks. I thought there it was. I should have thought of that the minute I heard Hope had kicked him out. That didn't make my chest warm. It made it feel heavy again. My great-nephew Owen just moved back into town, Greta, Mrs. Swanson said to me from her chair, and I looked down at her. He's a good boy. His dad's getting on and needed help with things. His wife had her head in her bottom, too, but she messed things up at least 3 years ago. It won't be too soon for him. I'm not looking for a fix-up, Mrs. Swanson, I said gently, but it's nice of you to think of that. Her eyes turned to the mirror as I used the pointed end of my teasing comb to separate another bit of hair to roll. Well, you just say the word when you're ready, sweetie. Be my pleasure to introduce you to. I again looked to Lou to see she was unraveling Mrs. Young's curlers, but doing it watching me. We had a hectic day, seeing as we always had hectic days. Because of that, I hadn't had the opportunity to share the fullness of what happened with Hickson in the back room with her. Lou and I had met years ago when she had come out to Denver for her cousin's wedding, and the salon I'd worked at had sent stylists out to do the bride and her bridesmaid's hair. Lou had sat in to keep an eye on things. We got to talking, and I knew she was my kind of people within minutes of meeting her. She didn't hide she felt the same. We kept connected through email, texts, and occasional phone calls. And not long after Keith ended things with me, she told me about Sunnydown and the fact her stylist was moving to Omaha because the man she met online was there and things were getting serious. I'd then taken vacation out in Glossop, stayed with Lou and her family, looked into Sunnydown for Andy, and found it was cleaner, nicer. The people were great, and it cost a whole lot less than where he was at in Denver. So I'd moved, and as his guardian, I took Andy with me. And Lou, with her long history of living in Glossop, she'd moved there from Yucca when she'd married Bill 16 years ago, and all her connections through her work had settled me right into that town like I'd been there since birth. So we hadn't known each other since forever, but we worked together every day. She'd looked out for me from afar, and she meant the world to me. In return, I gave great hair at her joint, treated her daughters like they were my own, and didn't point out Bill was an asshole when she was at my place, drinking whiskey and telling me all the reasons Bill was an asshole. In other words, we were tight. And looking at her right then, I knew she was worried. Worried that word had gotten out about Hickson and me. Worried that my mom had thrown down. Worried that Hope Drake had declared war. And worried that Hickson had walked into the salon and talked to me in the back room about things I hadn't yet had a chance to process through with my best bud. So, I set Mrs. Swanson's hair and put in Sherry's foils while Mrs. Swanson was under the bonnet. I then finished with them both while Lou took care of her clients that wandered in, got their hair done, had their say about Hope, Hickson, my mama and me. And when we had a lull with one of Lou's appointments, flipping through a magazine, waiting for her dye to set, and I had a break to go out and get us a late lunch, she cornered me in the back room,